Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today, it is my pleasure to have as a return guest to the podcast, Karen Edgett. Karen is a luminous force of creativity, a visionary artist, and an intuitive foodie who channels wisdom through artistic expression. Guided by the flow of universal consciousness, she brings forth radiant insights that transcend dimensions, weaving the seen and unseen into her work. With decades of deep exploration into metaphysics, Karen has cultivated profound connections beyond the everyday realm, bridging energies, decoding Akashic records, and receiving wisdom from higher selves, nature's messengers, and even food itself. Recently, Karen has turned her focus towards the luminous essence of flowers, capturing their divine beauty through intimate photography. Her self-published books and Botanical Vision Oracle deck bring forth the messages whispered by flowers, a wisdom revealed to her during the profound stillness of the COVID era. These gentle yet powerful beings urge her to share the teachings, offering guidance for transformation and harmony across the planet. Her latest book, Garlic Lover's Dressings, is finally out in print and also offered as a downloadable PDF, which offers a collection of seasonal, nutrient-rich dressings infused with activated garlic, each crafted to spark awakening and deepen the connection between food and consciousness. Karen, with that, welcome back to the Teaching Journeys podcast. It's a pleasure to have you back on the program today.
Thank you, Dave. It's a pleasure to be back. And that was a really nice intro.
Well, you're welcome. You provided all the material.
I did. It was written so long ago, I've forgotten it. And I'm listening to myself and I'm thinking, is that really me?
I've had that experience too. Whenever I've been introduced on a podcast, somebody will read my bio, I have that same reaction as well. But guaranteed, it truly is us.
Yeah, it is us. Let's do a pinch.
That's right. When I had you on the podcast before, I know we talked about the intersection of art, flowers, food, and spirituality. We went through a lot of different things with that. It was a really powerful, impactful episode. And today we're going to be exploring the multidimensional experience of life, your new book, the Botanical Vision Cards. So we're going to be covering another gamut of resources and skills that you have as an intuitive and a visionary artist. So I'm excited to get going.
All right. That's awesome. It's interesting how I can honestly say my journey began. For those who don't know me, I was a regular person with no remembrance of any of my connections to all the different dimensions and realms. And I eventually got really sickly, and the only climb out of it turned out to be a fairly spiritual, multidimensional path. And I found people who worked with kinesiology to help diagnose me and to say what the path to healing, and one thing led to another, and it all became very familiar with me. And now to ask the multidimensional information in the world, what do I do now? Or where's my next move? Or what's bothering my shoulder, you know, just makes complete and utter sense to me. It's like there's not a single path forward, a linear path anymore. It's all like, even time sort of morphs whenever you really need it to.
Yeah, I don't think there's any linear path to transformation or spiritual awareness. It's whatever path makes sense to us, but there's always going to be stops and starts in that path. I measure progress generally, if you take two steps forward and one step backward, you're still one step ahead and you still make progress. So
I don't think we ever really step backwards. I think that's the way it feels sometimes, but I think sometimes we step too far forward, and stepping backwards is a way to sort of adjust, because, you know, there are very few people that can handle, you know, going from A to Z. You know, most people do better going A, B, C, D, you know, or just finding their path that way. It doesn't have to be a defined A, B, C, D, but if you can leap all the way from A to Z, good luck.
I think the more aware we are, the more I think we realize that nothing in life is a linear path, and we realize that there's going to be some stops and starts, or that spirit's going to open up another door that may take us off the linearity of that path, but at the same time connects. So as long as we can walk in awareness, as long as we can continue to stay aware of the messages from the universe and make those connections, I think we'll be okay.
I honestly think as individuals are going to be okay, and as a peoples, you know, collective peoples, we're just going to get more and more connected and more supportive of each other as a result. Instead of dividing, I think we're going to learn. Because when you, like, there's a lot of talk about telepathy now, and as a more normalized conversation, still a little weird for a lot of people, but one of my friends texted me the other day. He says, how many fingers am I holding up? And I immediately saw the flash of three fingers. And so I said three. And he's like, correct. And then we were both like, whoa. But the idea is that everybody I meet almost is opening up. They're just, their hearts are a little more aware that they have a bigger role in receiving information than just in their brains. We're challenging that adage that it all has to be, you know, rote memory knowledge that someone else has is a finite answer. And we're understanding that all knowledge is just a stepping stone to more knowledge. And I always thought that if I was taught that science was a current collective understanding instead of a fact, it might have caused me to feel a little more interested in it. But the finiteness of the way it was always presented always made me feel like any open exploration is frowned upon. And I think now it's much easier to say, you know, this is our current understanding. It's no longer a fact. And people that are hanging on to facts are really hanging on to the past.
Yes.
And I know facts have a really interesting use at certain points. You know, like if you're building a rocket ship, you want to all agree on what materials to use and how to do it. But when you're going to build the next rocket ship, you have to allow for all that knowledge to evolve.
Yes.
And that's only by releasing the constraints that you needed for the first journey.
You know, Karen, as you were talking about the discouragement sometimes of exploration, I think we need to encourage exploration to facilitate critical thinking. I mean, science, there's always going to be a room for science for me in my life. I've always had a rational-based belief of the world, but through my own experiences, my own trauma, my own experiences with tragedy, I learned that there's also room for spiritual practices, metaphysical teachings to coexist with science and integrate with science to give us a greater understanding of how the world works. So I would not have been able to do that had it not been for my ability and my encouragement to critically explore perspectives outside of my core beliefs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. It's not our own core beliefs. It's the core beliefs of the institutions that we grow up in and love and care for that bring us community. They often bring us also those, like, you know, mm-hmm. those rules, like only eat Swedish meatballs.
Yeah. And I mean, well, there's a lot of different types of meatballs that taste just as well, but we have to be encouraged to explore different food tastes, different things that resonate with our palate. So I think the ability to be able to critically explore outside of our own core belief system is crucial for any type of growth, just in general growth through the developmental cycle or growth as a result of tragedy.
Right. And I think that one thing I've found is that right now, it's actually really easy to explore multidimensionally. You know, we have a way of sharing knowledge now that's just so rapidly exchanged through all the social medias and through podcasts like this. And so if somebody has an idea and they can actually explore it and find out something, they can post it and other people can figure it out too. And then they feel freer to explore what they're exploring. And it's really, we're much less reliant on an institutional knowledge for guidance and what to explore, you know? And it's kind of, to me, like the perfect marriage of, you know, a multidimensional situation in our physical world. I mean, we still are going to have bodies for a long time. Yeah. I don't know when humans are going to give up bodies, but as long as we have bodies, we may want something like a car. And so you're marrying the two, you know, but the car might hover, or the whole idea of a car with synthetic radio tires that could drive this fast. There was a time when that was out of our consciousness. Yep. So it's interesting how I feel like everything's blended together anyway. It's just a matter of admitting it and allowing the exploration to expand into even greater and greater realms.
You got it. And you mentioned multidimensional living. Talk about the multidimensional experience. What does that look like on Earth? What does it mean to live multidimensionally in the human form?
I think a lot of us do it already. And sometimes they call it an inkling or an intuition, but we will get information or messages. It's relying on tapping into these other resources, like acknowledging consciously that the flowers actually have energy in our living beings and have messages. And in some people's cases, it's trees. Acknowledging the life around us and acknowledging the fact that this life has its own consciousness different from ours. And you can actually share that consciousness and exchange with that consciousness and, you know, really enhance the experience of being a human. So forever, people have been talking to angels, but it was always done under the guise of some religious supervision. But now people are like, look, I got a guardian angel, you know, I need to like be safe on this road trip and I'm going to take my guardian angel with me. Mm-hmm. That's a multidimensional experience. In my case, I've worked with a lot of people who use energy, like acupressure and acupuncture and intuitives to get well and to find my path forward. I feel like I communicate with all kinds of beings and I can hear their voices. Like I explained with someone just putting up three fingers and I can sense that. That's all multidimensional and just embracing it in your life. If you ever feel stuck or you feel like you can't move forward, chances are you're limiting your perception. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's like, I think people like Einstein said, you can't shift things. You can't solve a problem with the same consciousness that created the problem. So a lot of this multidimensional living is how do you step out of the old consciousness and into the new consciousness? And if you just start noticing around you, you know, sometimes it's going to a particular seminar or listening to people that are actually doing it in certain ways. But what I've found is that all of it makes sense and you have to kind of learn a bunch of stuff till you find your own path. And I've been doing it a very long time. But it's like if you get up in the morning, you can make a conscious intention of what's going to happen that day and how it's going to happen and how it's going to unfold on your behalf. Or you could just go about your day. And if you go about your day and it all works great, then maybe you're in complete alignment. But if you go about your day and you keep running into little obstacles, then maybe you're not in alignment. Maybe you haven't set a proper intention and maybe you haven't acknowledged what's available to shift the way you see your day so that it can be harmonious. And it works extremely well. The multidimensional pathways work extremely well in the medical field because that's what I call the placebo. And they say 33% of people actually respond to the placebo. And that's a multidimensional concept that you're given some pill. It doesn't matter what it is. It's just the fact that you're mm-hmm. given a pill and you get better. That's a multidimensional improvement. And it's already proven it works for a third of our population on this earth. That's a huge population. So the mind has shown over and over again that it actually can't discern fact from fiction. Only the heart can. And so if you put the mind to the task without including the heart, which is the connector to all this stuff, then your mind isn't really working at full speed. It's kind of limited. It's like someone tells you the truth or a lie, your mind can't tell. They're only listening to the emphaticness of what they spoke. But if your heart's listening, they can say, well, that's true for you, but not me, or that sounds like it's a good truth for everyone right now. Your heart can say all that. And I'm not talking about just big truths. I'm talking about little truths, like, do I really need to brush my teeth now? Or are they just telling me I have to? There's things like that. Or am I really going to benefit from this if I do it? If your mind's listening to the ad, you're going to be like, yeah, I can. But if your heart's listening, you might have a real thought about it. Like, this is not necessarily going to help me. It just looks cool.
Yeah.
So I guess the multidimensional living is really just allowing yourself to tap in and solicit the help of the world around you on a conscious multidimensional level. So a lot of us solicit the world around us to help us, but we do it subconsciously. And a lot of us try to force the solicitation of the rest of us, of the rest of the world to help them. But if you are working in sync with the world and you have, you know, if it's the trees you resonate with, if they're helping you, if the flowers, for me, the flowers and the food and the art really do a lot for me. Those are my go-tos. But I have regular conversations with Archangel Michael, and I would have never, I wasn't raised to talk to Archangel Michael, you know. I'm like, come, put rings around me right now. My heart needs to calm down, and it'll work. Or even just, our breath is our great connector to source. So even just stopping and recognizing the breath and taking the time to meditate, even if it's 30 seconds or a minute, just breathing into that heart space and into your belly, it re-centers you and reconnects you. And that's somewhat physiological, but it actually is, it's a tool that we were all born with as humans to like, just stay in our more divine human sense. I was raised in a Christian religion where we were taught that we were made in the image of God, meaning we're divine creatures. And it wasn't until very late in my life that I started to really understand that. Yeah. And in order to be a divine creature, you have to be open. You have to be, you know, seeing both, not judgmental, not dualistic, just allowing community, but not just with other people, but allowing community with all of nature and all of the universes.
Yeah, it's expanding our understanding of what community is. It's just not necessarily limited to what we can see. It could be what we can't see, but we can connect to.
I have a fun example of a friend who got Parkinson's disease. And apparently some people, when they get Parkinson's a little more advanced, they see all the multidimensional creatures around them very distinctly. And she said, it was really quite nice because I was so isolated and I couldn't move. I couldn't do anything. And every day she was surrounded by these creatures. And she said she didn't want the anti-hallucinogenics because she was enjoying their company. You know, and it was, I mean, why not, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly if you're getting to an end of life stage, you know, if that's,
yeah.
I think individuals at the end of life, from my perception or my belief, the veil between this world and other worlds, it kind of quickly dissipates. And that's why a lot of individuals at the end of life will have death visions. They'll see, you know, they'll see their loved ones, they'll see their pets. So for me, you know, I think, you know, those type of situations, those types of illnesses, particularly at end of life, can really make us more wide open for a multidimensional experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that a lot of people do get a little softer about seeing between the veils and, you know, when they get a little bit old. And if they don't, you know, they often are scared of the end. I'm in a senior living place right now, because my mom is here, and the vibrations in a lot of these places are pretty high because people are entering that stage where they're, you know, the caregivers are in a state of love, and the, you know, people are entering that state of, you know, trying to find some peace before the end. and, you know, sort of reconcile everything. And it's kind of interesting how the vibration is usually pretty high in this place.
Yeah, it's like if we can see with our hearts and hear with our hearts, that kind of filters out a lot of what the mind gymnastics that will be played when we're trying to determine truth from fiction. And a lot of times our heart can be our guide. And our heart's intuitive. Our heart, I think, to me, fuels our intuition, you know.
Circling back to science, it has been proven that because we have beautifully sensitive instruments now, it has been proven that all information comes into our hearts and then gets disseminated to our brain or discarded or gives us the tingles. We get something in our body, a reaction in our body, or it goes to our brain or it goes away. And so it's coming here. So if your heart is aware that it's coming in here, you can start to consciously direct that information as well more accurately versus thinking it comes from here. You're missing the ability to control where the information goes and what the information is, in a way. But it's going to take us a while before our schools are teaching us that the information comes here and comes here next. And how do we guide what that is and what we want to keep and what we want to discard? That field's wide open if anybody wants to get into it.
You heard it. Karen just put an open invitation out for the listeners of my podcast. If you want to tackle that particular issue, come up with a curriculum for it. I know she'll be all ears, and she will listen with her heart.
That's true.
So tell me about the botanical vision cards. This is another part of the multidimensional experience. And I know before we recorded, you mentioned that you wanted to talk with our audience about how those work. And so I'm going to turn it over to you. Tell us about the botanical vision cards, what inspired it, and how this all aligns with the multidimensional experience of living.
Okay. So COVID comes. Everybody's heard of that. I'm an artist, a painter mostly, and I was called to get out of galleries and shut down my studio and kind of retreat to my house. So I did it. That's a multidimensional cue. Can't quite explain it. And I didn't know why. I have a background in photography, but I don't consider myself a photographer. I didn't have any cameras at the time. And I was doing these long walks to get out and about because there was nothing else to do. And the flowers started speaking to me and said, take me pictures, take my pictures. I'm like, you're not turning me into a little flower photographer. That's so whatever. And I couldn't stop hearing their voices. So I started just snapping pictures with my iPhone, and they said, make them into a grid. So I made them into these energy grids. And then I would see people in the street that looked sad, and I'd be like, oh, you want me to take your portrait? And I'd montage their portrait with the energy grid of the flowers, and they would become really happy. And it was all a masked photo project. And as that was going on, the community got involved, and they got put up in all the storefronts, and it really became kind of a fun experiment. And I did it all for the community. I didn't charge people for it. And some people bartered me things, like my orthodontist said, if you do mine, I'll give you your orthodontist for free, which is really nice. And we had a great time with it, but now it's kind of waning because the mask thing was going over. The flower said, okay, well, now you have to look deeper inside. You need to get out some macro lenses and you need to really notice our consciousness. And they started talking to me about how they form grids around the world when they're blooming, and they're actually converting energy from the sun and energy from the earth into this new consciousness. And they're constantly doing it, and they don't have any political agenda. They don't have any woo-woo agenda. It takes nothing to actually notice and appreciate a flower. There's no practice that you need to do. I mean, yeah, if you want to sit in a field of thousands of flowers, it's probably a higher vibrating moment than if you sit with just one. And cut flowers don't have quite the same energy that ones growing in the outdoors do. But that's more nebulous. The real issue is that the flowers have a consciousness. It's measured by science. The energy fields around them are measured by science. They have now found that each energy field actually attracts bees. And when the bees come close, they buzz, and the pollen the pollen, the stamens become more energized and just jumps off onto the bees. I think we all thought the bees wrap themselves in the pollen. They tend to do that more when they're spreading, you know, the male-female pollens from plant to plant. But the flowers just started talking to me. And then one year they said, make a oracle deck. So I did. It's called Botanical Visions. And that is a morning glory on the front. And then these are all different macro images of flowers. And then as I was creating it, I asked for them to give me a message. And so each one of them gave me a message. And then the way it works, it's more like a wisdom deck. If you're stuck on anything, you ask it a question and they will tell you a direction to unstick you. Dave, do you want me to pull one for you?
You're sure. Stuck on- yeah, absolutely. Go ahead and pull one for me.
Do you want to say out loud what you're stuck on? Sometimes it helps too.
Yeah, I know. Witnesses. I'm just, Wow. I can't think of anything that's coming to mind at this point.
All right. So let's just say that Dave thinks his life is perfect. But that's okay. We'll just do one for that, just for the fun of it.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So when I hold them up in Phantom, you just tell me when to stop, like when you see one that you think is resonating with you.
That one right there.
This one?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know what this means to you because I don't know what the situation is, but this one says, ask as a prayer. When you ask as a prayer, you ask and you receive, right? Because that's kind of how we think of praying. So next time you need something, you might want to sit down and ask as a prayer instead of just saying, hey, universe, I want this. And actually sit down and structure a little prayer for it. Maybe it'll happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the power of intention and the power of being clear
right.
In terms of what you need. Yeah.
But it also, not even just asking the universe, but maybe directly asking God what you sense as God. Writing an intention down saying, you know, I want to make $100,000 by the end of the year is one thing, but asking is more like, you know, dear God, show me the way to make $100,000 before the end of the year, you know.
But, you know, they ask for a prayer, that's kind of relevant. I did think of something, and I thought about it silently and put that intention out there silently, and that card actually aligns with what I was asking. So,
well, that's awesome. I had a cute story about myself once. I'd traveled halfway around the world to swim with the whales, and I'd got there and I forgot my mask that fit me perfectly when I dove down in. I have a narrow head, and I was so upset. And I thought, well, I might as well ask the flowers because I don't think I can go on. Because we're in a very remote area. I mean, getting another mask would have been almost impossible. And so I picked one and the card said hum. So I started humming. And this girl that I didn't know walked past and I said, I forgot my mask. And she said, oh, I brought two. And one's really small, so it'd surely fit your face. That's a multidimensional living.
Mm-hmm.
There's a prime example there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Are there any self-imposed barriers that people have that prevent them from living multidimensionally, from your experience?
I think that we do all the time, and it's hard to sort it out, to be honest with you. My journey's been pretty wiggly over the years, but I'll take a recent example where I felt like I was overreacting to people that were critical and in ways that weren't really appropriate. And I was overreacting and I thought to myself, why am I overreacting? You know, with all my wisdom, why am I overreacting? And it turns out that even though I have all this wisdom and I have all this expanded consciousness, there was a piece of me when I was 7 years old or something like that, that was so dismissed and criticized that needed to be healed. And because I work multidimensionally on, you know, solving these problems, I was able to, you know, sort of talk to that 7-year-old and say, well, that happened, but it's, you know, we're different now. We can actually, I'm different now, you know, it's not going to happen again. We know better. And you sort of reparent them, and then you bring them back into yourself. So you become more of yourself. Lots of times a fragment of yourself can be stuck somewhere, screaming at you to be reparented and brought back in. And it, you can't make sense of it in the linear path, because if I'd even gone to a therapist in my years, I might not have figured that out. And while I was doing that, something else came up that really triggered me. And a 3-year-old popped up and said, hey, I had an issue when I was 3 too. And I'm like, all right, come on, grab, get on my shoulders. And we walked around for a while and talked about it. And then pretty soon they integrated back in. But the triggers went away. When the triggers went away, then the behavior from the others that were triggering it dissolved.
Yep.
And I would say that that kind of stuff does get in the way, at least for me. You're going along, but all of a sudden you're not wise and you're like, what? And it's often like a signal that you've got to stop and go take care of something from the past. There can be snags, but that doesn't mean I'm not wise and I'm not multidimensional. I don't have all these skills, but it does mean I'm still in the human experience, which is probably why I'm still on this earth.
Well, the thing is, our past is going to come up, and we have to honor our past, because our past informs our present and dictates our future. But also, Nietzsche, I think, said something, if we ignore our past, we ignore our existence. I mean, the past is a part of who we are, and that is going to come up. And when that comes up, it begs us to look at that and say, okay, how can we learn what happened to us in the past to live multidimensionally in the present, or just simply live and co-create the reality that we choose with the universe as our co-creator? So I think when the past comes up for me now, it's a good thing. And as I get older, the past keeps coming up more and more, and it just says, you need to take a look at this. As part of your continued evolution as an elder, you have to look at this.
Yeah, and interesting, it clears it. When you clear it for yourself, it clears it for others in humanity, others in your family. And actually, for those that can see and can go back and review, you don't have to spend much time there, but it actually is helping to reduce the barriers for everybody's, you know, ability to move through life. And I just want to use that to like touch on another project, my cookbook.
You must have been reading my mind, because that was my next question, was your cookbook.
That's a little telepathy between us.
That's a little telepathy, yeah, but that was the next thing I was going to ask you. Tell us about your wonderful cookbook.
Well, I'll tell you briefly that I've had a very long journey with garlic. It's part of my not being so friendly to the regular allopathic medicine. I had to turn to a lot of things that helped me heal with that weren't, traditional penicillins and stuff like that. So I became very familiar with garlic, which is known in the past as Russian penicillin, and it's been used for centuries to heal people. And I learned more about it and how to use it as an antibiotic. And I have used it to heal many different conditions that I've had, but it also has a lot to do with your ability to lift your consciousness and connect to spirit. And it's also been used forever for that too. So one of the things I do a lot as a hobby at home, I'm actually a nutritional cook on top of being an artist, but one of the things I do at home is I make a lot of dressings. Mm-hmm. And I activate garlic by crushing it and waiting 20 minutes, and then you can add it to things. And I create these dressings all the time, and then eventually I'm just like, why not start taking pictures of them, and why not? Here's one called horseradish dressing with Meyer lemon. And it's just, I did make the horseradish fresh that time, which was kind of fun to do, but I don't recommend everybody do that. They can go buy it on their own, or the spicy ginger shallot. And they're all using slightly different recipes than what you're used to with dressings. And they're all using activated garlic. So they're all probiotic rich, along with being antioxidant rich. And actually, people really love that spicy shallot. Some interesting ones in here. I talk a lot about using different fruits in the dressings as part of your acid instead of just vinegar. Mm-hmm. And this one's using the apple and the sage and the garlic to create a real powerhouse. So they're just fun little dressings. It's a fairly small book, but I'm kind of pleased with it. And anybody who comes to my house is like, oh, what dressing do you have today?
What are the health benefits of garlic? I know it's not good for your breath, so you probably have to have quite a few anti-breath mints after you had a lot of garlic. But I know there are health benefits to garlic. What have you found to be the most common health benefits that garlic possesses?
Oddly enough, for as much garlic as I consume on a regular basis, I've almost never had anybody say I had garlic breath. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting because, I mean, that to me, that's always, whenever I've had garlic, I mean, I could smell it on my breath for days, no matter what
I get. Yeah, some of it might be the way I always activate it first. So if you crush garlic and then wait 20 minutes eating it or using it in your cooking, I think a lot of the compounds change and the sulfurs that make the bad breath aren't as potent.
Yep.
So if you're eating garlic straight or garlic without crushing it, I think you actually are just, you're not breaking things down the way it really needs to be broken down for your body ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And the allicin is the name of the penicillin type antibiotic in garlic. Once you've smashed it, all the chemicals inside of it make the penicillin. And 3 cloves of garlic on the average equals 1 pill or shot of penicillin. It doesn't work as fast as penicillin, but it also doesn't kill the other good bacteria. So you have to be prepared. Like if you're really, really deathly ill, you know, go for the penicillin or whatever antibiotic you need. But if you have time, you're not that ill, the garlic will actually make you healthier in the long run. But I honestly think if you crush the garlic before you eat it, wait, and you're going to actually find a reduction in the way it gives you garlic breath.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of natural health benefits to the clean foods, you know, that we choose to eat. And, you know, I've tried to eat cleaner as I've gotten older, and obviously combine that with traditional Western medicine and also some dietary supplements that, you know, I think will improve my overall functioning. And, you know, and I also know that food has its own energy properties as well. I had one of my friends is a shamanic practitioner. You know, just did a kinesiology experiment with where she put certain foods in my hands, and you could see the foods that resonated with my energy. My hand didn't move, but then the ones that did, my hand dropped like an anvil, you know, to the down the ground. It was quick, it was precipitous, and it was pretty profound to me to see just how foods whose energy don't resonate with our body, what effect it has on our body,
You know,
And I think in terms of when you mentioned about flowers and nature speaking to you, I mean, if we look at it, many indigenous cultures, that's how their ancestors speak to them, is through the natural world. I think it's a beautiful way to experience the world. And I think if we can all experience the world or be open to experience the world that way, I think we can have a society that's more heart-centered, that's more compassionate, that's more tolerant of each other's beliefs, and more willing to create diverse communities where differences are actually embraced because of the teachings that they render. So there's a lot to be said, Karen, for how you and other intuitives and empaths see the world.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that there's more and more of us out there. I mean, there was a time when I didn't feel like I could talk to anybody about this, and here I am sitting on a podcast now talking freely to you. So it's really changed a lot. And the food has been a big part of my journey. I started eating cleaner when I started learning that I needed to take care of my own health, what I put into my body. And that was probably about 30 years ago. And then about a decade ago, certain foods fell off. It became apparent that dairy was not in alignment with my system, and fried foods were not in alignment with my system, and coffee was not in alignment with my system. So foods started to like drop off, and it's been gone for a couple decades. And I tell some of my friends who are on the path of clairvoyance, I said, careful, the pigs might come and speak to you and say, don't eat us anymore. He said, you can eat them until you hear that voice.
Yeah.
But once you've heard it, don't eat them anymore. Take them seriously. But there's a certain signal your body gives you when it's ready to excel to the next level. And right now I'm plant-based, and it was odd because I was eating the best meats. You know, I was trying to bless them and make sure that best, you know, organ meats, you know, blah, blah, blah. I had everything figured out. And my body always felt like it was being electrocuted. And eventually I realized that my body couldn't handle meat anymore. And it's not because meat's inherently bad. It's because of the fact that, you know, there's grids. Beings create grids on this earth. Flowers create grids when they bloom, and animals create grids. So there is a cow grid, and then there's type of cow grid, and there's these grids that are laid on top of grids. And if one cow is being treated poorly, the other cows in that grid feel it. And so the vibration of animals is actually low right now. And so if you're raising your consciousness, your own vibration is raising. And so plants are going to be a higher vibration, and they can help your body upgrade, because it's one thing to upgrade your spirit and your heart, your intuition. It's another thing to actually upgrade your body with it. And the plants can really help do that. They can help open up channels. They can help. So I'm not saying quit eating meat. I'm saying, listen, you may be guided to eat less meat. You may be guided to stop eating certain kinds of meats. You may be guided to only eat fish. You may be guided to eat none of it. And the electrical current in my body just leveled right out. But I'm also not allowed to eat. My body hates like refined foods. So try being plant-based. And you have to make your own crackers if you want them, because my body's so particular now. And it feels great when I honor it, and it doesn't feel so good when I don't honor it. But it's food has so much cultural meaning to us and so much community meaning to us that the toughest part of switching what I eat. For me, being a cook, I can switch out whatever I want and get the right proteins or the right nutrients I need. But the, you know, walking into a family that's eaten, you know, what they're eating and I can't eat it, it's sort of like blasphemous almost. Yeah. So it takes a while to reestablish my relationships with family and friends as I change my diet. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, I know in my culture, I'm half Lebanese, and, you know, my grandmother was the matriarch of the family, and every Sunday she would bring, you know, her sons or, you know, daughters or the nieces, nephews, grandchildren. Then we'd all get together, have a big meal and around food. We would talk about, you know, the events of the week. We would talk about issues we were dealing with, and we solved problems over food. We celebrated over food.
Yeah.
And if you came to my mother's house and you didn't eat anything, you probably were likely not coming back, because you had to eat something, you know, at least something. So when I broke off, and I still eat, you know, Mediterranean diet, but not in the excess that I did before, where it was like, well, you eat, you know, until you bust. I do miss the family gatherings and the cultural significance of bringing families together. That's the one piece about that I do miss. But there is a lot of cultural significance to food, to meal planning. And a lot of times, if we have to relinquish that to embrace either multidimensional living, to embrace cleaner health, to embrace plant-based diets, which had been documented to improve physical and mental health care outcomes, there's a certain sense of loss and yearning and grief, because we're relinquishing those traditions that were part of our identity.
Well, an interesting story about Japan. They were vegetarians in Japan up until one day one of the kings said, look at all the Westerners, they're bigger than us, you know, and they're building all these rockets or whatever they're building, you know, they're industrialized. And he wanted the land of Japan to be like these westernized countries, so he deemed that they would be starting to eat meat. And so now they eat a lot of meat. And you've got the Wagyu beef and this and that. And so we don't realize how it does change anyway, you know? Mm-hmm. And I have been excommunicated from several circles because of my change in diet, but I have been invited back into a few of them. Either because they're eating more salads or something, but I figured out, you know, what I can bring that gets me reinvited so I can at least enjoy the community of it. But someone not trying your food is hard.
Yep. Yep.
And someone not inviting you because you don't eat the same thing is hard too. So the young people, though, kind of get the embracing people where they are. So I'm really excited about that. When I meet people that are younger, I'm like, they're like, oh, it's, that's cool if you don't eat that. And I'm like, really? That's nice.
Yeah, that's one of the things why I love working with the younger generation. A lot of times they just let things roll off of them, and they're not as judgmental as individuals in our age about what we eat or what we do. It's just like, yeah, just go with the flow. Do what makes you happy. And that's one of the benefits. One of the things I've learned from young adults in terms of working with them is kind of that go with the flow and just, just let life be what it's going to be. As long as you're happy, who cares what anybody else thinks? And that's something that they taught me in abundance of. So
that's awesome. The world's always evolved by young people. Not that older people don't have their value, but, it's just easier because the older people did all this work to shift things. And then the young people come into that already in that shifted state. And then they have a job to shift things further. But every generation really does have it easier than the previous generation, no matter what they say.
Yeah. And I think every generation, old and young, can work together to shift the narrative. We can throw the kind of biases of ageism on both ends of the spectrum. Well, you're too young to really either make an impact or for me to learn from you. And, well, you're too old to still be useful and for me to learn from you. And if we realize we can all learn from each other, regardless of age, that together we can make a difference, that's the other part that I think is going to allow us to embrace multidimensional living in the human form.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's all wide open. We're all fluid. We're all people. We're all on the cusp of really telecommunicating with each other. Instant access and all this wildly creative information that's being shared all over the world is really... it's really shifting us so dang fast, and the shift is towards love. The shift is towards acknowledging each other where they're at.
Yeah.
And if you watch the news, it may seem like the opposite, but you actually have to get out there and see what's really happening to know that what's really happening is that, the world is going through this metamorphosis.
It's going through a metamorphosis, and I think eventually it's going to morph into a version of the world that espouses inclusivity, tolerance, embracing differences for what they can teach us, as well as celebrating our similarities. And if you look at it, we're all members of the human race. We share the same DNA. If we can get past all of the conflicts that the human experience tends to present to us and just see each other's souls, the world would be a great place.
Yeah, well, I think on that note, the world is a great place already. And honestly, we're always, as humans, we're always looking to improve this experience on this earth. I mean, each generation has its own ideas of how to improve it. And what someone did before isn't necessarily the way of the future.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. When you get older, you get to have seen many layers of generations come in and see kind of, and also you're still aware of the generations that came before you and what they thought was a great accomplishment, and I mean, my grandfather loved telling stories of driving the first Model T and how you had to go backwards up a hill because the gas tank was gravity fed.
Yep.
You went forward, you wouldn't be able to go up the hill.
Yep, that's right.
There's layers that we just go through as humans. And as the older you get, the more you can see the progress and put everything in perspective, which is kind of neat.
Absolutely. Karen, we're just about coming to the end of our time together. It's been another great conversation. Again, I appreciate you making time today for this discussion. And one of my last questions that I do want to ask is, if you got one ultimate takeaway or wisdom to leave with our audience today, what would that be?
What pops into my head first is something you've probably heard a million times before, or your audience might have, but honestly, just really appreciate yourself and love yourself. I mean, we're all experiments. We're all humans. We're all here doing our best and trying to improve on a daily basis. But lots of times we don't stop and like really appreciate and love ourselves. We keep just thinking about what do we do next? What's our next level of pushing ourselves, when really appreciation for where we've been and where we are and, you know, a love for that goes a long way.
I think it's a great message. Similar messages have come through, or wisdoms, or have been passed on by my other guest contributors. But I think hearing that message over and over about love yourself,
appreciate
love others,
yourself.
Appreciate yourself, love others. I think if we can continue to hear that, we can bring the world to a vision where we see it. And I think you're right. I think initially, yeah, the world is a great place, but we can make it an even better, more inclusive place if we can espouse some of these principles. So my last question for you, if people want to get in touch with you, purchase your botanical wisdom cards, purchase your books, contract for your services, what's the best way for them to do that, Karen?
Just go to my website. It's KarenEdgett.com or KarenEdgett.art. And my name, my first name is spelled with an I, and Dave will put that in the notes. But if you Google Karen Edgett, I should come up. My website should come up. And for your listeners, I have a $5 coupon code. It's PODCAST $5. That anybody could use on the website for something that they see there that they want to purchase. Or like you said, I have a lot of different things that I dabble in and do. And sometimes you might just want to sign up for my newsletter, and I'll send you bits of information from time to time.
It sounds good. I'll make sure all of that information, including the coupon code, gets in the program notes when our episode drops on all my podcast platforms. So Karen, with that, thank you so much again for another great conversation. I look forward to having more with you in the future. And again, thank you for taking time today to be a guest on the Teaching Journeys podcast.
Well, thank you, Dave. I really appreciate all that you do. I'm so glad. And thank you for asking me twice. And may you have a blessed rest of the year and holiday season, rest of your life.
Yes, you too. I'm sure our paths will cross again, Karen.
So. I'm hoping so.
Me too. And with that, that's a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.